Welcome, everyone, to We Have Issues, our weekly comic book podcast that opens the vault, feels the boom, weathers the aftershock, and marvels at every issue released this week. I'm your host, Keith, and I'm here to talk to you about every series and every publisher that was available this week. But first, of course, we do start with a little bit of news. Not a ton of news because of the gigantic amount of news from Comic-Con last week. Make sure to check that episode out. I had a lot of fun with Case, and there was a lot of great stuff in there. So make sure to check that out. But the few things I did want to go ahead and go over, a gentleman from Congress that's been getting a lot of positive praise from comic book nerds lately is Mr. Congressman Robert Garcia from California. And he has revealed his plans to host a free comic book day event at the U.S. Capitol. That's cool. I really, really like that. That's a really great idea. And I appreciate him, you know, making it more of a visible thing. I would really hope he, you know, is going to focus on some legislative stuff too. That'd be really nice because there's some worrisome stuff going on, which we won't get into on this show because it's not really our purview. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good thing. So that's cool. I think I'm curious. I want to see some photos of this. I want to see like Nancy Pelosi picking up books and stuff. Yeah. Next up, a little bit of DC news. DC has announced a new Black Label series called Batman City of Madness. This is a Black Label series. As I said, it's a horror story about a hidden version of Gotham City. This is going to be written and illustrated by Christian Ward. So, you know, it's going to be insane. It is going to be a 3-issue series. Looking at this, I'm hoping it's one of those giant size ones, the prestige size ones. Because those are really, really cool. We don't really have one going on right now. But yeah, the covers alone just look amazing. And I really, really want to see this. So yeah, I'm definitely going to be picking that up. The other bit of DC news is Batman and Robin are going to be introducing a new version of Hush, which is going to be a younger female version of Hush. And her name is Shush. I don't know if I love this or hate it. It's one of the two. I do like the apparent laziness of it, but in a fun way. I think that's really cool. I don't know. We'll see. She's going to debut in Batman and Robin number 2. And yeah, that's really fun. I love Josh Williamson. I love Simone DeMayo. So I think it's going to be fine. Yeah. So definitely worth a check out there. Also, Marvel, let's move on to Marvel. Marvel is introducing a publishing company for young children. That's called Marvel Beginnings. This is going to be for children 0 to 3 years old. And it's kind of like an educational company, putting out books with, you know, some popular Marvel characters, teaching kids about, you know, basic stuff, numbers, colors, shapes, things like that. I think that's cool. I mean, why not? You know, that'd be cool. I wish I had that kind of stuff when I was a kid. You know, I was using pretty generic learning material, and I definitely would like to have had a Spider-Man how to count book or something like that. So, but yeah, I think that's a really great idea. Doesn't impact us on the show, obviously, and neither of us have kids. So, yeah, you know. But last bit of news, Marvel is going to celebrate the 50th anniversary of one of its most beloved characters ever, Howard the Duck. In November. It's going to be a one-shot, and it is going to be Chip Zdarsky and Joe Quinones, which I really, they did the mini, the ongoing in 2015, so I think that's really cool. There's going to be some other people coming in, Daniel Kibble-Smith, Merrick Kay, Andrew Anywu, so yeah, I'm definitely going to pick that up. Howard the Duck, it has a soft spot in my heart. I don't like the movie, but the comic is just, he's just great. He's funny. And yeah, good stuff. With that said, we are ready to move on to our comic reviews. I told you there was not a lot of news this week. And as always, we don't start with a bang. We start with a boom. Boom Studios is our first publisher. And our first book from Boom is a very welcome surprise for me for a book that I didn't think was going to get a sequel. We're getting Alice Never After, the sequel to Alice Ever After from Boom Before, written by Dan Panosian, London illustration by Dan Panosian, Wonderland illustration by Giorgio Spalletta, with assistance by Cyril Glerum, color by Francisco Segala, with Gloria Martinelli, and letter by Jeff Eckelberry. Yeah, it takes place, of course, obviously it's a sequel, so it takes place after the original series. And I really liked the original run. And when I saw this was coming out, I was kind of curious as to what is this going to be? And I think they found a really cool niche within the story to continue. I think it's a smart move, and it's definitely something worth reading. I would certainly read the first series if you can, though. This should be out on trade, I believe, so you can definitely pick it up. It's totally worth it. It's really good. It's mind-bending. It's amazing. But you might, some of the subtleties of the story might be missed on you if you don't read the first volume, but definitely check it out. It's a high recommendation from me to pick up, and a very welcome surprise for a book that I really enjoyed. Next up is The Expanse, Dragontooth number 4. Written by Andy Diggle, illustrated by Rubin, colored by Raul Angulo, and lettered by Pat Brosseau. I mean, I love it. It's The Expanse. What can I tell you? It's one of my favorite properties in sci-fi, fantasy, whatever you want to call it. Any genre of fiction, this is one of my favorites. And I really think this is such a great companion to the TV show. And if you're watching the TV show, this is a definite thing you want to add on to it. It's something that it adds quite a bit, and features a lot of your favorite characters, people coming back, obviously. Of course, my favorite is Amos, and it always has been. But I actually am a really big fan of Bobby Draper, too, and she's used pretty well in this as well. We get to find out a lot about the conflict, and it's very Expanse, because in The Expanse, no conflict is really what it seems on the surface. And that's one of the like highlights of the series and their storytelling. And this one is no exception. I really liked it. So very excited. I did kickstart the big trade that's going to be coming out, so I'm going to get the whole thing, but I am going to review as issues come because I love it that much. After that, we have a finale, The Seasons Have Teeth number 4. Written by Dan Waters, illustrated by Sebastian Cabral, colored by Dan Jackson, lettered by Nate Pigos of Blambot. I loved this series. It was an emotional journey. It produced this level of guilt and grief and just the sheer weight of it weighing down on you. The idea of this mission that this man has to take these photos and the actual illustrations of the seasons personified were just absolutely beautiful. And it was literally a grieving process with this man. And I honestly had no idea how it was going to end, and I didn't know how I wanted it to end. And I think it ended really, really well. I really enjoyed this book. It's one I'm going to be thinking about for a long time. And I would not be surprised if it comes up in our end of the year awards, because I think it's going to sit with me. It's really going to sit with me. It's like a song. It's like when you hear a sad song at just the right time in your life, and you forever associate that song with that time and that place and those people. And I don't have that connection. I didn't lose anybody or anything like that, but I feel like this is just imprinted on this moment. And yeah, really, really great book. So The Seasons Have Teeth, number 4, excellent. The next Boom book is Creed, The Next Round, number 2. I got this amazing Super Nintendo cover, which you guys will see on Twitter, and it's fantastic. So make sure to check that out. Written by Latoya Morgan and Hi Jameson. Art by Wilton Santos, DJ Chavez, Joe Jaro, Maria Keane, Joanna LaFuente. Letters by Anne World with creative direction by Michael B. Jordan. This, of course, is the continuing story of Adonis Creed's daughter and her attempts to become a boxer and reaching out to his half-sister to train her. I really like it. I love the near future of it all. The technology is obviously more advanced than what we have, and I think that adds an interesting angle and everything. There's a reference about robots, like we've had robots that are like servants, and I was like, please tell me that's a Rocky reference. And if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about, because it's hilarious. But I really, really enjoyed it. I think it's going to be a very good run, and I'm a big fan of the movies too. I really like the Creed movies. I'm a big Michael B. Jordan fan in general, because he's not just an amazing actor. He's not just beautiful. He's also a fucking nerd, and I love that. So, but this book is definitely a worthy successor to those movies. So make sure to check that out. Creed, The Next Round from Boom. And our final boom book is another finale, The Neighbors, number 5. Oh, man. Story by Jude Olson S. Doyle, art by Letizia Cotonici, colors by Alessandro Santoro, and letter by Becca Carey. This was such a good, creepy, dramatic story that came to a very satisfying end. A satisfying end in that, and again, I don't compare books to each other. I don't say this is like this. But if you enjoyed... If you enjoyed a lot of like what Boom puts out for horror, or even what like Vault puts out for horror, that don't necessarily have a happy ending but have a satisfying ending, I think this is up with them. I just think it's so well done, and the questions about identity and exploring who you are, I just think it's really, that's also so well done as well. I thoroughly enjoyed this book, and it's one of the ones I regret Josue's on hiatus and not able to talk to me about it, because I think he would have some really great opinions on it. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So make sure to check that book out. After that is our next publisher, which is Scout Comics. And I have a stack of Scout. Every once in a while, Scout will put out like a batch of number ones all at once. And I love it. I love it because I get to explore all these new books. So I have several number ones. I also have a number two. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, let's talk about Talon, Seed of Darkness, number one from Scout Nonstop. Created by Caspian Dark, Banished Shadow, and Jeffrey Vincent. The writing is by Caspian Dark and Jeffrey Vincent. The art by Banished Shadow. Letters by Micah Myers. This is first of all, a gorgeous book. And such high quality, like the high quality art with the glossy paper is just so nice. It makes it like look like a really important book. It gives that feeling of importance right away. Just this fantastic art on this amazing paper. So I wanted to get that out of the way first. It's this amazing story that takes place in modern times, but has a prequel in the time of the Black Plague. And it sets up this world, this dark world. It's visually very dark world, and these characters. And I really like this. It's so dynamic and it's so theatrical. It's cinematic. It's a really great story. And I'm already hooked. I'm already hooked on this book. I think it's going to be really, really great. And I can't wait to get more of it. After that is The Wild Cosmos, number one. Written by Curtis Clow, art by Mauro Mandalari, colors by Unifue Harrison, and letter by Tobin Ressacote. So this is the other thing that I love, is that when Scout does this thing where they release a whole bunch of number ones, none of them are remotely similar. That's what I love about it. So we go from this weird, dark horror fantasy world to straight up sci-fi. And I love this this kind of sci-fi aesthetic they have, which is the scramble to survive sci-fi, you know, get the supplies where you can, found family, you know, we got to eat kind of thing. Like, it's not glossy like Star Trek, even though I'm a huge Star Trek fan. It's more Firefly, it's more Cowboy Bebop, and I really, really like it. And it's got a good hook. It's got a good start. I think this is a really interesting thing. This is something that, like I said, the hook got me right off the bat. I thought that was a really cool idea. I think it's something I'm going to be interested in and I want to follow. And it's just really, really great. I don't want to give too much away, but I would recommend this definitely. If you're a big sci-fi fan, if you're big like maybe like Expanse fan or something like that, it's definitely up your alley. So The Wild Cosmos, number one. And my final number one for Scout this week, Charm City, number one. Written by Josh Isariki, illustrated by Scott Van Domelen, color by Lorenzo Palombo, and letter by Josh Isariki. First of all, I love this one. It's modern times, but with a magic twist. And it's centered around like characters, and it's centered around like a very modern tale, and it's written very in a modern style, like lots of lots of banter, lots of dialogue. It's not about this grim, dark, like, look like Talon was. So they're very distinct from each other. This one is really good, and it is a murder mystery as well, which I'm really enjoying. And I'll be flat out with it. It's set in Baltimore, and it's very much set in Baltimore. And as someone who lives in Pittsburgh, who is a Bengals fan, none of us really like Baltimore all that much, specifically the Ravens, and the Ravens get several shout outs in this book. I thought that was funny. I'm not like that kind of person that just absolutely hates it or anything like that, but I just thought it was very funny. I was like, wow, of all the cities, couldn't have been Cleveland. That could have been worse, I guess. But the book itself is great. The main character, I already love her. There's a really good hook as well about this series of murders that are linked, and she has a personal connection to. We meet several characters right off the bat. There's a couple really cool moments, specifically in the opening teaser scene, where you get a really cool like tease of like someone about to do something badass, and then it kind of gets flipped on its head later. Like, it's just really cool. It goes places you don't expect. It's not predictable at all, but it's also not random. It's well structured. I really, really enjoy it. And then my final Scout book of the week is my number two, which is Miracle Kingdom number two. Written by Michael David McCarthy, art by Alonso Molina Gonzalez, colors by Ichsan Ansori, and letter by Lucas Gattoni. Now, you guys might have seen I had a spoiler-free preview of this some time ago. And I hope when you listen to my spoiler-free preview, you took the time to pre-order this book, because it's really, really good. And I'm glad I can talk a little more openly about it, but I still don't want to jump too much into it, because it is about the moments, and revealing them to you kind of lessens a little bit, but I can recommend it highly. This is a very theological Scout book, but in a very fun way. I really like, imagine like Angel Detective Noir. Like, it's just fun. I really enjoy it. Yeah, we start to dig into like the beliefs and the what is beyond our world, but it's also very like governmental. It's very regimented, which I thought was a really cool take on it. Yeah, I recommend it. It's really good. I've also read issue 3 already, and I don't want to spoil anything and jump ahead. But Miracle Kingdom, please pick it up. I really like it. Michael's a really great person on Twitter. Sent me those three, and I really appreciate it. And I cannot wait for you guys to read this. Please read it. It's one of Scout's best. And that takes me to my next publisher, which is Ablaze Comics. I only got one Ablaze book this week, and it is Traveling to Mars, number 7. The Eisner nominated Traveling to Mars, I should say. Congratulations on the nomination, guys. Written by Mark Russell, art by Roberto De Carmeli, colored by Chiara Francia, and letter by Mattia Gentili. This one has a really cool twist, and I'm asking myself how much I want to talk about the twist. For those who need a reminder, this book is about the gentleman who is dying of cancer. He doesn't have long to live. A company has hired him to basically launch him to Mars so we can claim Mars on that company's behalf, and they can have access to the mineral riches there. He knows he won't make it back. That's the whole point. But they'll give his family a bunch of money if he does it. And that's kind of what the whole book's been about, is him coming to grips with this and him reviewing his life. And it's been a really emotional journey, and it's been really, really good. And this one was, it's interesting. It's probably the saddest issue to me so far, just because of the one thing he wants before he passes away, he can't have it. And he has a conversation with his mother that was really emotional, that I really enjoyed. And there's something going on at home. There's something going on back in Earth. And part of me wonders, no, I'm not going to say it, because yeah, part of me wonders if this is all going to be worth it. We'll just put it that way. But Traveling to Mars has been incredible. You should be reading it. It should be on your pull list. Yeah, check it out, Traveling to Mars. I have nothing else to say. Just read it. It's great. Everybody should be reading this book. So, next up is Dynamite Comics. And we're going to talk about Disney Villains Scar number 4. Written by Chuck Brown, art by Trevor Fraley, colored by Chiara de Francia, letter by Jeff Eckelberry. This is the conclusion of the Scar prequel. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. It does show how Scar kind of came into power, how he recruited the hyenas, how he, you know, was able to overthrow Mufasa eventually. And I like how it was done. I like the thematic stuff that does repeat in the movie later on. And yeah, it's really, really well told. I could have probably dealt with another volume of this even. I really enjoyed it that much. So, but obviously, Disney fans, this is a must pick up for you. There's also an advertisement at the end for the next Disney villain series, which is Hades from Hercules. That's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see how they're going to do Hades. You know, like he's the god of the underworld. Like, and there's a lot of modern adaptations of Hades that are relatively nuanced, like Hades Town, for instance, and Lower Olympus. And I'm just curious to see where they're going to go with that as well. But definitely pick up Scar now that it's done. You should be able to pick up a trade, and it's totally worth it if you are a Lion King fan. And make sure to check out all the covers, because every issue has had multiple amazing covers. And our next publisher, we're jumping to the big ones. Let's start with Image Comics. I'm going to start with World Tree number 4. Written by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco, color by Jordi Belair, letter by Aditya Bidikar. We're starting to get a lot of questions answered. We're starting to get identities revealed. We're starting to get, well, the cast is thinning down a little bit too. That helps. We get to see back in the past when this all began a bit and get an idea of like how this began, where this came from, who these people are. And this book has been incredible, and it's such a mind-bending story. It's 100% a James Tynion book, obviously. It's very clearly his MO, but it's just done really, really well. And I think the art complements the story very well. Obviously, it's the number 4. I'm not going to go too much into what happened. That's kind of our rules, number 3s and 4s. We don't dive in too deeply. And by now, you should be reading this book. If you're not already, you should be. Get the back issues, read it. It's great. It's kind of hard to find, to be honest with you. Like, it's almost always sold out every time I go to pick up my comics. So, but yeah, make sure to check out World Tree 4 and 1 through 3 if you haven't already. Next up is Indigo Children number 5. Oh man, this book is nonstop and I love it. So the Indigo Children number 5, as they continue to recruit all the indigos, obviously one of the indigos is not working with them, is working against them, but they don't know that. And this is the episode where, or the issue where they get recruited. Story and script is by Kurt Pyers and Rockwell White, line art by Alex Dioto, colors by D. Cunniff, and letter by Hassan Atsmani Alhau. Really good, like I said, lots of really great action. I love watching the Indigo Children work as a team. I think it's really compelling viewing. And yeah, I just really like these characters already, and I like the powers. I think they're unique and interesting, and yeah, very, very well done. I'm very curious to see where it's going, to see if the traitor is truly a traitor or if something's going to change, but it's compelling. It's definitely worth checking out. Next, we're going to drop into the Massiveverse for brief stay, for Dead Lucky number 7. Dead Lucky is back, everybody. I love Dead Lucky, so I'm so happy it's back. Written by Melissa Flores, art by French Calamagno, color by Mattia Ioncono, letter by Becca Carey. So BB is back, and now she's working with her arch enemy to take them down from the inside. And I just want to mention again, because I absolutely love it. I love her character design. I love the costume, the mask. I love her holding the little submachine gun. I think it matches her really well. It's just a great aesthetic, and I really dig that. The story is really cool, and I love the idea of her trying to take them apart from the inside, and they have to know that she's trying to do that, at least in part. But they seem to be prepared for that. They seem to be keeping her busy, keeping her out of San Francisco. And everybody else in her life doesn't really get what she's doing, doesn't understand why she would do that. And yeah, I mean, it is an interesting idea. It is something that, you know, could backfire on her. But I think, I just think it's really well done. I really like the character and I want to see where it goes. So yeah, Dead Lucky 7, it's back. Check it out. It's amazing. And our final Massiveverse book is Rogue Sun 14, written by Ryan Perot, art by Abel and Marco Rena, colored by Natalia Marquez, and letter by Becca Carey. I really like this one because it's a dynamic that we didn't get much of, and we finally get a chance to explore it, which is Dylan with his father. Now that they're both trapped in the Sunstone, and while Dylan's body is possessed by their ancestor, they have to work together, and we get to see this dynamic with his father, and we get to see these other rogue sons, which I think is really cool because they have great designs, and I just love it. I think it's a really cool bonding experience, I guess is the best way to put it. I love the design of the Viking Road Son. I think he's just awesome looking, even if he is kind of a prick. And yeah, just a lot of teasing, a lot of like going back to their families and stuff like that. Exploring that family as a whole. And yeah, I'm really curious to see what the end game of this is. I'm really enjoying it. And yeah, Rogue Sun is a lot of fun, like really a lot of fun. And it's distinct and separate from all the Radiants, but can cross over if need be. So you don't have to feel overwhelmed by checking it all out at once. So Rogue Sun 14, good stuff. And next is DC Comics. Okay, here we go. I don't mean to sigh, but Night Terrors is going on, and the DC section gets longer and longer. DC Ruby Chapter 6, written by Marguerite Bennett, art by Sue Lee, colors by Marissa Luis, letter by Morgan Martinez. So Team Ruby is working with the heroes to try to save the DC Universe from the merge, and they have to really do quite a bit of the work because, you know, the others are getting corrupted, and it seems like Team Ruby are the only ones who can really solve the problem with some help, probably from like Diane and a couple others. But they seem to be spearheading it, which is good. They should be. They are kind of the main characters. I love this. Again, Weiss Schnee is one of my favorite characters, and she's all over this book. And yeah, highly recommend. If you don't know who Ruby is, you might have a bit of trouble. But if you start from issue one, I think they do a pretty good job of explaining who the characters are and what the deal is. And if you have not watched Ruby, I recommend watching it. It's fantastic. And the action scenes are really, really, really well done. Very fun. And the characters are great. I just wish Jean and Team Juniper actually appeared more in the other, like these comics and stuff, but I can't always get what I want. So, but I do love Team Ruby, you know, specifically Weiss, as I said, but they're all great. So yeah, check it out. Now let's talk about Night Terrors number 2, the core series. The one starring Boston Brand, aka Dead Man, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Giuseppe Comencoli, Stefano Nessi and Casper Vingard, with colors by Frank Martin and Casper Vingard, and letter by Troy Pateri. This does feature Deadman using the Lazarus serum to bring back the Golden Age Sandman. And that kind of leads me to some of the questions that I have, which is like, where's the Sandman? Like, if someone's causing this kind of trouble in the nightmarescape and with people's dreams, I would expect Morpheus to show, or not Morpheus, I guess, his replacement, to show up and try to solve a few things. That's interesting. I wonder if they'll ever go that way, or if they're just like, that's not convenient for the story. I get that. I totally understand that. But yeah, this is a really interesting story. I love Boston Brand. I love him getting basically his own crossover, essentially. I thought it was really cool. He's digging into the origin of insomnia and who he is, and it's just really great. We get this really creepy look at the sleepless nights. And I love the idea that the, you know, all the robot heroes they have that don't have to sleep. Like, as soon as they started showing like Red Tornado, I'm like, ooh, the Metal Men. And it's like, yeah, like, it's so cool. I really think that's an interesting thought that they had to talk about how important that would be. So really good stuff. I really enjoyed that. First Night Terrors solo book is Action Comics number 1. And this is a really great Power Girl story. Written by Leah Williams, art by Vasco Georgiev, colored by Alex Gamaras, and letter by Becca Carey. This is very much a nightmare. This felt like a nightmare. It was very much going from terrifying moment to terrifying moment, things she's afraid of, betrayals by friends, and then just simple things as, you know, public speaking being terrifying or the people you love dying. And it's just really well done. I really think it's fun. I'm curious to see how she gets out of it because of her recent experimentation with, you know, powers of the mind. I wonder if that's going to help with that. Or maybe I would like it if maybe Supergirl, because she can punch through minds, would come over and Power Girl, so she can come over, punch through, and like maybe help the others, because seems like she would be pretty important to that. There's also a really great backup story I should mention for the rest of the Super Family, where they're dreaming, they're having a nightmare of Cyborg Superman, and in this case, he took over Connor. Really cool. I really enjoyed that too. It also features a very disturbing Crypto, which is what I will say. So good stuff. Next up, Night Terrors Angel Breaker. This one is a highlight book for the Night Terrors run so far for me. Written by Tim Seeley, art by Aki Bright, colored by Brian Reber, and letter by Seda Tomofonte. I haven't said Seda's name in a while. It's Angel Breaker teaming up with a Raptor to go on a mission, and I really thoroughly dug this. I love Angel Breaker as a character, and it's someone that just gets touched on every once in a while and probably should get a lot more focus. And it is a completely different story than what's going on in the other Night Terrors books. It's not just, oh, I'm in a nightmare. There's something going on. There's something plotline-wise going here that I think is going to be very important at the end. And it's Tim Seeley. As you know, I love Tim Seeley. So make sure to check that one out. It's totally worth it. And next, Night Terrors Detective Comics, number one. This one, so I was vaguely worried they were just going to make another story about Batman and do him having two different bad dreams. That's the fate I have in the Batline, unfortunately, right now. This one's written by Dan Waters, art by Ricardo Federici, color by Brad Anderson, and letter by Steve Wands. This one's actually about James Gordon, which I really like. And with some really, like, well, the art's great. Ricardo is an amazing artist, and the introduction of these characters and the creepiness of them is just really cool, and the design is insane looking, and I really like it. And I also really like Gordon-centric stories. I always thought he was a really fascinating character. Of course, I am a big Barbara Gordon fan, so maybe that's part of it, is because I just love Barbara so much. Obviously, I'd like her father, too. But there's some just really great creepy imagery in this. And I think it's definitely one of the creepier solo stories from Night Terrors. So really, really good. Now on the opposite end of the spectrum, but not in any bad way, is Night Terrors Harley Quinn by Teenie Howard, Hayden Sherman, Trona Farrell, and letter by Steve Wands. This one's great because essentially Harley is in her nightmare and she's like, I've already faced down my nightmares. And essentially, she speed runs the nightmare game and finds the dev room and basically can hack reality. I love that. I think that's a great way to highlight Harley Quinn in something like this, to make it true to the tone of the book, like a little bit goofy and a little bit multiverse bending, while still maintaining the tone of the crossover itself. I thought it's just really well done. I liked it a lot. I thought it was funny. And then I love the idea of the hijinks that Harley can get into in this simulator of the multiverse. I think that's a lot of fun. So if you're a Harley Quinn fan, definitely something you want to check out. But yeah, I was impressed. I really liked it. Which leads me to my last DC book, Night Terrors Titans, number one. This one is really cool. I'm really liking what they're doing with the Titans. I know we're only two issues in, but I'm a big fan of what they've doing with the Titans, making them A-listers, making them the team in DC. This one's written by Andrew Constant, art by Scott Kudlutsky, color by Ryan Cody, and letter by Wes Abbott. Now, you might be saying, Titans, well, I mean, like, this is Night Terrors. Everybody's dreaming. Are they all dreaming together? Well, here's the thing. They're all in the same dream, but it's not their dream. And the reveal of whose dream it is at the very end, and I love it. It's great. So I'm not going to reveal it. It's definitely something you want to read. But I really liked it. I thought it was cool. All these are only going to get 2 issues. And I think this is the first one that I read that I was like, I want this to be a 6-issue mini. I think we could have stretched this out and made the scavenger hunt and fighting the Titans a little bit like more involved and dig into like their damages and stuff. I thought that'd be really cool, but I totally understand working within, hey, we got 2 issues. That makes sense to me, you know, and I think taking that into consideration, I think it's paced very well. It's just, I really wanted it to breathe a bit more, and there's not a lot of creative team can really do with that. You're told 2 issues, but it's really good. It's really, really, really good. And yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Cyborg was pretty cool, and I really like the Cyborg bit, which most people know I'm not a huge Cyborg or Donna Troy fan, and I actually like them both quite a bit in this. So yeah, totally worth a read. Which brings me to our final publisher of the week. And you know, we always wrap up with Marvel Comics. And good God, do I have a Marvel Comics week for you. Let's just get started. First up, let's start with a trio of Spirits of Vengeance. Cosmic Ghost Rider number 5. This is a finale. Or is it? No, it is. But it might lead to more in the future, and we'll explain that when we get to the end. Written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Jui Villanova, colored by KJ Diaz, and lettered by Travis Lanham. Of course, we do know that Frank, the Cosmic Ghost Rider, has been split into multiple parts by a black hole, and he has to bring himself back together. It's a very fun and exciting conclusion. It is very jokey, but I don't mind it. I like Frank. I like the idea of Frank like loosening up a bit, you know, later on in life and making some jokes and stuff. So I thought that was really cool. It's very cool, and it has a really cool reveal at the end, is what I will say. I'm not going to spoil it, but it has potential for a further story that I think would be excellent. So if you're a fan of Cosmic Ghost Rider, this might be something you want to check out. Next one was Danny Ketch Ghost Rider number 3. This one is written by Howard Mackey, art by Daniel Picciotto, colored by Gorilla Effects, and lettered by Travis Lanham. Not going to dig too much into this one because it is a past story. It's a flashback story. We don't typically dig too much into stuff that doesn't affect modern canon, but I am enjoying this book. It does feature Scarecrow in a pretty prominent position, which I always think it's funny when people realize that Marvel also has a character named Scarecrow. A lot of people don't really get that, but he is a pretty cool character of his own. And it also features Caretaker pretty significantly, which is a total flashback to Ghost Rider of old. If you're someone like me who used to really like Ghost Rider when he was a kid, this is a really great book, and it's a pretty fun ride. Danny Ketch was my first Ghost Rider, I want to think. I'm pretty sure he was. And so it is a nice flashback for me as a kid, so make sure to check that out. And my final one is Ghost Rider himself, 16. Written by Benjamin Percy, penciled by Chris Campana, inked by Oren Jr., colored by Brian Valenza, lettered by Travis Lanham. This story is so cool, and it's almost a side story, I guess you can call it, and it does focus on the 3 main Ghost Riders, including Robbie Reyes, where they, let's just say, they all encounter the same person at different times with similar results. And this is leading us directly into the big crossover that's coming up with Wolverine and Ghost Rider. And I really liked this. I love legacy stories when it comes to Ghost Rider. I think it's really interesting. There's a certain connection between the Ghost Riders that doesn't really exist in the same way to a lot of other legacy heroes. And I really like it. And also, I just really like Robbie. I want Robbie back in the 616. I know he's somewhere in the void working on his car. Hopefully he'll be back soon. But this run of Ghost Rider has been really good. And I really like Talia Warroad. She makes a very brief appearance in this one, but I want her to appear more. I should also tell you, if you are in for some gory body horror stuff, this is the issue for you. There was some stuff in here. I was like, holy shit. So yeah, really, really good stuff, though. I really thoroughly enjoyed that. So all 3 Ghost Rider books, A-okay in my book. Next up, let's stick with the Hell theme. Hellcat, number 5. This is the conclusion of this run, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Alex Lins, color by KJ Diaz, and letter by Ariana Mayer. I love Patsy Walker. She's like one of my favorite Marvel characters, like low key one of my favorite Marvel characters. And I've just really enjoyed this run so much. I think it's, I love Christopher Cantwell as a writer. I think he's incredible. But I think the highlight to me is Alex Lins's art has been so out there and amazing, and just it fits her so well. And I like, we know from the last issue, I can spoil, she is transformed into what is, you know, ostensibly, quote, her true self. And that design is so cool. And then, like, there's a lot that goes on in this issue. And the way everybody's drawn, the way the action's drawn, the way the characters come to conclusions in the plot, I just loved almost everything about this book. I really, really like it. And it makes me sad this is coming to an end, because Patsy is one of the more interesting Marvel female heroes. And I really think should have a longer run with this creative team. I think they really could do great things. So everybody make sure to pick it up. Maybe we'll get another volume, or, you know, some new book if ever enough of us buy the trades. And now let's talk about some Radioactive Heroes. First of all, The Incredible Hulk, number 2. This book is classic Hulk, classic monster Hulk. Like, I think they said actually, when they were writing it, or when Philip Kennedy Johnson was writing it, it was specifically to draw us back to the monster era of Hulk, to remind us that the Hulk is a monster. And yeah, it does a really great job of this. It also gives him like a sidekick in the vein of a Rick Jones, but with a completely different feel to it. And yeah, I really like it. I think it's really cool. The art is very grim and kind of gross at times, which if that's your thing, go for it. I mean, like, Hulk art can be like silly or can just be really creepy and weird, and this one definitely leans towards the creepy and weird. And even in this issue, which doesn't really feature the Hulk, it only features him right at the end, but just everybody else, it's just it's so interesting. But I love the humanizing effect of this sidekick chick. I think she's going to be a really important story. I think she's going to matter long term, and I think that's really cool, because Bruce doesn't really have anybody else at the moment. So I think it's a smart move, and I want to see what impact she has on the plot. Now for the more important Hulk book, and I'm joking, but I'm also not joking. She-Hulk number 15, written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Andres Genolet, color by D. Cunniff, and letter by Joe Caramagna. Jen has to come to grips with who the scoundrel is and what he is all about. And she has to make her choice, and she makes the only choice that Jen can make. And I think this is a great wrap on this series, an unfortunate wrap on the series because I've really enjoyed it. But we are getting a new run, Sensational She-Hulk, with the same creative team. So we'll see what's going to happen there. But this issue is kind of the return to prominence for Jack of Hearts and what he's meant to the series and how he's stolen the hearts of me and Josue and everybody else reading the book. They have the cutest moment, and I love it. And just there's so many great things that happened in this series. And I'm speaking as a massive She-Hulk fan, because I've read all of Savage She-Hulk. I've read all of the original Sensational She-Hulk. I've read everything around Civil War when she had her own run. And I've read this whole run. I really love She-Hulk, and this might be my favorite run of She-Hulk. Like, it's that much fun, and it's just great. And Punch Club is great. I want a Punch Club jacket. Yeah, hell yeah, let's do it. Okay, and then my last solo hero book is, well, not even solo, it's a team up, Daredevil and Echo number 3, written by Tabu Umbir Earl, art by Phil Noto, letter by Clayton Cowles. In this one, we see the two timelines coming together. It's not like we did find out in the last issue. It's not necessarily a flashback. There's something concurrently happening. And we do get a lot more emphasis on this, of what's happening, who these people are. Why is this person look like Echo? You know, I really liked it. I really found myself clicking in this issue with Matt's ancestor. In the past two issues, I just kind of was like, oh, he's just Matt's ancestor. But I actually really liked his character in this issue. there's a level of betrayal he feels that I realized I didn't process how that would feel until I read this. And I was like, he's right. That would be, you know, very upsetting. And I thought that was really interesting to kind of process. I really liked this book. I mean, I love Tabu and Bureau when they write together. They're just amazing. There's one issue left, and I'm very, very curious to see where we go from here and see what they do next. Give them more work, because I really, really enjoy what they do. So, all right. That brings us on to Ultimate Invasion number 2. Okay. Let's talk about it. Ultimate Invasion number 2. So we do know what's going on here. The Maker has escaped prison, and he is making his own version of reality. Written by Jonathan Hickman, penciled by Ryan Hitch, inked by Andrew Curry, colored by Alex Sinclair, and lettered by Joe Caramagna. One of my favorite things in this is the literally lifting word for word, shot by shot, from the Ultimates number 1, a conversation Iron Man had, and replacing it with his father. I loved that. I really thoroughly, because I distinctly remember that entire scene for some reason, like very vividly. And just to see it again was really, really cool. I do love this idea of the Maker controlling everything controlling this world for himself. Maker is one of my favorite villains, because I think an evil Reed Richards is horrifying and also very interesting. I love this because the way he takes care of threats before they get there. And that's kind of like the whole point of this. He either kills them, he either imprisons them, or he controls them. And some of the changes are really, really interesting. I love the Monk Hulk. I think he looks cool. I love the Yoshida Alliance, the Harada Yoshida Alliance from Japan. I like the Rasputin family. Now, I might be misremembering the Ultimate Universe, but the Rasputin family has Colossus, Ileana, and what looks to be Omega Red. I don't know if Mikhail and Omega Red were the same person in the Ultimate Universe. They might be, and I just don't remember. But if not, they have Omega Red, but not Mikhail. So I think that's interesting. And it's just basically, even with all the control that the Maker has, there are still people struggling against him, and there will always be people struggling against him. And it seems like the main person he's trying to ally with is Howard Stark in this case. This is interesting. I want to see where it goes, because I was a big fan of the Ultimate Universe for a while, and I was kind of bummed to see it go, really, but I did feel like it did get played out. But if we get a version of it back, I think it would be really interesting. So I don't want to pass judgment yet until I know more of what we're going to get, but definitely a fun ride. And I mean, if nothing else, we get more Ultimate Universe. So that's great. Next up is The Avengers number 3. I'm really liking this new run. I think it's a lot of fun. Written by Jed McKay, art by Sia Villa, colored by Federico Blee, and lettered by Corey Petit. So when Kang died, he teased some future events that are going to be happening, and it seems like one of them is already starting, which is the Impossible City. I'm not going to dig too much into it, because I think I'm going to get more into it in the next issue when I review it. But these incredibly powerful creatures travel to different cities on the Earth and make a stand and try to take over them in their own ways, and the heroes have to split up and like confront them. I really like the way they distribute the heroes. It's very tactical. I like the way these Avengers work. I like the little bit of tension we see between Captain Marvel and Black Panther for a moment. I think it's just a really good compilation. Also, I just love seeing Wanda in a team book again. I love Wanda. So, yep, 100% a definite read. Everybody should be reading the Avengers. It's fantastic. Next up, we're going to talk about our Spidey books. First up, What If Dark Spider-Gwen. This is a what-if book, so I'll talk about it a bit, but again, it doesn't impact too much in our actual universe. Written by Gary Conway and Jody Houser. The script was by Jody Houser. Art by Ramon Box. Colored by D. Cunniff and lettered by Ariana Mayer. This is a what-if Peter died saving Gwen story. So it's not a Ghost Spider story in that she became Ghost Spider. She doesn't have powers in this, and it's just about her finding out, you know, trying to get revenge on the Green Goblin for killing Peter and tying Harry into it without Harry knowing that Norman's the Green Goblin. I thought it was really well told. I used to really like the Spider-Man what ifs. There was one where there was like three what ifs in the same book, where it was like, what if this person got the power, and it was three different people. And I think one of them was Gwen, actually, but one of them was also John Jameson. And I really liked that one. But this is really cool. I really enjoy it. I love Gwen. She very much wears Peter's costume in this, and yeah, she looks great in it. Let me just tell you. So my crush for Gwen grows as always. So good stuff. After that is Spider-Man India number 2. This one was so hard to find. It was sold out everywhere I went. I had to buy it digitally just to be able to read it for you all. So you're welcome. But I did buy it, for the record. So this one is written by Nikesh Shukla, penciled by Abhishek Masuni, inked by Scott Hanna, colored by Niraj Manon, and lettered by Joe Cara Magda. I do like the individual spin of a lot of typical Spider-Man stories. Specifically in this case, the neighborhood turning against you because they're tricked into thinking you're a threat story. I really like it. I like that this is a struggle against the Lizard. I think he's a good base Spider-Man villain. I don't like when people reach immediately for the top tier villains. I think it's more interesting to tell that. And when you're telling a ground level story, I think it's more interesting to tell something with Sandman or Scorpion, or, you know, in this case, the Lizard. I really like it. I think it's a really interesting story. I love the design with the sash. I think it's really cool. Yeah, really, really good book. And I hope everybody's reading it because of Spider-Verse and their interest is piqued in this character, because he is a lot of fun. After that, we're going to talk about Hallows Eve number 5, written by Erica Schultz, art by Michael Dowling, color by Brian Reber, and letter by Joe Carab Magna. We love this book so much. This book is so good. Hallows Eve is one of the best Spidey books out there right now, and this issue is no exception. She takes personal responsibility, but it doesn't mean she's necessarily a good guy. And she has a reuniting with Maddie at the end, and another reunion as well, which I think is going to be an interesting angle on what's going to happen, especially with Dark X-Men coming up. Is that going to play any kind of like factor into that? So we'll see. But yeah, Hallows Eve, fantastic. The powers are cool. The character is great. I love it. It's one of my favorites. So definitely check it out. And then Silk number 3, written by Emily Kim, art by Iguara, colored by Ian Herring, and letter by Ariana Mayer. Okay, I'm going to very briefly review the book, and then I'm going to make a statement. I love this book. It's a lot of fun. Silk has been like traveling between different like dreams and realities while her archenemy is trying to control her. It's really a lot of fun. It's up to her brother to save her. That's the summary of what's happening. But here's the statement I want to make. Silk needs an ongoing. She's had 3 minis at this point, and they're all very good. Give this character an ongoing. Marvel, please. I'm begging you. Let someone, let Emily Kim, because Emily does a great job, build a foundation for this character so that we have something to work with, because it's just such a great character. So that's my plea to you, Marvel. Give Silk an ongoing. And for you, all of you out there, read Silk number 3. It's great. And next up is Venom 23, written by Torin Grønbech, art by Ken Lashley and Ramon F. Box, colored by Frank D'Armata, and letter by Clayton Cowles. This is, we're on the Dylan part of the story right now. And Dylan is, of course, trying to recruit all these symbiotes to help him once he has to face his father again. And in this case, he meets up with Toxin. It's a really good issue, and it's really grim and dark, and I really dig it. We'll see where it goes from here. It is going to be continued. So I really liked it. I thought it was really cool. And it's got a surprise appearance on the last page. I won't get too much into it, but definitely a character I wasn't expecting to see in Venom. I will say that. So, and our final Spidey book of the week is Amazing Spider-Man number 30. And this one wraps up the current, or at least I think it wraps up the current Doc Ock storyline. Is this a tease for Superior Spider-Man? Maybe, because we know it's coming back. I don't know. We'll see. So Creative team is written by Zeb Wells, penciled by Ed McGuinness, inked by Mark Farmer, Cliff Rothburn, and Ed McGuinness, colored by Marcio Meniz, and letter by Joe Caramagna. Yeah, basically, Norman in the last issue was injected with goblin serum, and we all worried he's going to go dark and everything, but I love it. He just kind of laughs it off. He's like, do you know how much goblin serum I have in me? He's like, this isn't going to do anything. I thought it was pretty funny. And Octavius being so arrogant and thinking he had everything solved and just not even thinking about that is funny as me. Because that's the kind of thing that costs Doc Ock always. It's just one dumb thing he overlooks. So the next issue is going to be the first appearance of MJ as Jackpot. And I'm really excited because I really like her having powers. And I think it's going to add an interesting dynamic to the book. Now we're going to move on to our Krakoa books for the week. First of all, the excellent number 5, which is not technically Krakoa, but I would really like them to be. Written by Peter Milligan, art by Michael Doc Allred, color by Laura Allred, and letter by Nate Picos. This wraps up this arc with Zeitgeist trying to become a god. Well, spoiler, he succeeds. However, the ecstatics come together to stop him and make a final desperate stand, which is really, really great. It features the return of a fan favorite character. And it wraps up like all the other excellent characters, including Mirror Girl. I thought we'd get more from her in the end. I thought maybe she would be the one to deliver the final blow or something like that, because she's been so meek the entire time and everything. But maybe that's not all we're going to get from her. Maybe she'll pop up again in the future. But all in all, it was a good mini. I really enjoyed the run. And definitely, if you are a fan of that, you know, the Allred run in X-Force and Ecstatics and all that, it's totally a worthy addition. Check it out. After that is Storm number 3. Not going to spend too much time on this one. Written by Anne Nesenti, art by Geraldo Borges, colored by Andrew Dahlhaus, letter by Ariana Mayer. It is the third issue of this flashback tale. And that I'm really actually really liking. It's definitely got like maybe a time travel aspect or something. We'll see. We also get the reveal that Kitty No did not get full body tattoos. Obviously, we knew that because she doesn't have them. Although I thought it'd be funny if she did have full body tattoos and she just phased and let the ink fall out of her. I thought that'd be great, but it is what it is. But yeah, really good. Really liking it. It's a great era of X-Men to re-explore. Just not a lot for me to really go over right now. So. After that is Wolverine 35. So now we're going to start talking about the Hellfire Gala. Written by Benjamin Percy, art by Juan Jose Reap, colored by Frank D'Armata, letter by Corey Petit. Now this takes place essentially simultaneously with the Hellfire Gala, where X-Force makes their strike against Beast and his walking monstrosity of a base. And they just tear the place apart. I'm not going to go blow by blow. It was a lot of fun. Long story short, Beast doesn't really have a base anymore. And he does get away with 3 of the clones, I want to say they said, of Wolverine. But he does get away to haunt us another day. Hopefully this all pays off and he actually does something good for Krakoa eventually. But knowing him, he won't. But yeah, a lot of fun. Very violent, very bloody, very cool. After that is Deadpool number 9. I got to give a shout out to the Hellfire Gala cover because it's my boy Phantom X. Where the hell is he? Written by Alyssa Wong, art by Luigi Zagaria, colored by Matt Meehan, letter by Joe Sabino. We get some big revelations here, and Deadpool finds out quite a bit about Valentine, and will it change their relationship? What's going to happen? I really like this. It's one of my favorite Deadpool runs in recent memory. I think Alyssa has an amazing bead on the character. And the goofiness, but also heart that comes from Deadpool. So I think there's a perfect balance there. So I've been recommending this Deadpool book to anyone who listens. So definitely pick that up as well. All right. Now we're going to get to the nitty gritty. And oh boy. Okay. X-Men Hellfire Gala. Number 1. Creative team, I'm just going to run through it real quick because there's so many names. Written by Gary Dugan. Art by Adam Kubert, Luciano Vecchio, Matteo Lolli, Russell Dutterman, Javier Pina, RB Silva, Joshua Cassar, Chris Anka, and Pepe Larraz, with colors by Rain Burrito, Cesar de la Cruz, Matt Wilson, Eric Arcenega, Marta Gracia, and lettering by Virtual Calligraphy. I have thoughts. This is going to be a little spoilery in case anyone's wondering. I apologize. I'm probably going to get into spoilers with this one. I understand why they did what they did, and I think it's going to be a very interesting story where we're going. I personally just, I was really loving the happiness of Krakoa, and I hope that that is something that they can achieve again. But this is definitely a well-executed attack by Orcus to completely devastate the idea of Krakoa. It was well done. My only concern, and I've seen a couple people with this concern, is that we finally got a really diverse group of X-Men and they were almost killed immediately. And I was like, come on, man. That's unfortunate. But I don't think that's the last time we're going to see those characters. I don't think it's the last time they're going to step up and do something. So I'm not going to fight that too much. I will say seeing my boy Juggernaut elected to the team was amazing. And Kane is the best. I want him to do so many things. But this is changing. This is going to change the dynamic of X-Men. Everything we've known since Hoxpox has changed. So anything further would be a massive spoiler. And just in case you haven't read it or gone on Twitter ever, then I want you to read it yourselves. So, but it's really well done. I'm just sad it had to happen, I guess. And the final book, for the first time ever, our final book is not an actual X-Men book, but it's Invincible Iron Man number 8. Yes, I'm surprised too. Written by Gary Duggan, art by Juan Figuereo, color by Brian Valenza, and letter by Joe Caramagna, because this takes place after the Hellfire Gala. What was Tony doing there during the Hellfire Gala? Well, we find out. And he ends up meeting with Emma. And a lot happens. We do see Emma with a very brief meeting with Wilson Fisk, and we don't know the details of it yet. I'm sure that'll be important later on. But Emma and Tony working together to hold off some Sentinels, and both doing the whole I'll sacrifice myself for you thing, but back and forth, which I thought was pretty funny. It's like, no, I will do it. Like, I liked that a lot. But we're definitely setting the seeds. And we definitely see the reason why Tony might want to marry Emma, which is, we've been spoiled, happens, because now he can claim Krakoan citizenship and he doesn't have to give up his technology necessarily. I think that's interesting, and I think it's going to lead to something very fun. I don't like them together romantically, but I don't think it's supposed to be a romance, so that's fine. I still think she's best with Cyclops, just throwing that out there. So, and those are the issues that I read this week. I don't have a lot of other books to talk about. I'm on vacation. Spoiler, that's why my audio sounds a little bit different. I am in a country house in the south of Washington, D.C., and I am enjoying myself. I'm dog sitting, and it's just me and the dog and TV, and so I've been focusing strictly on that for now. But I do want to go ahead and give a quick shout out, because as I said, I'm on vacation. I'm nowhere near my home. And so I don't have access to my comic book store that I normally use. But luckily, over here in Fredericksburg, Virginia, I had access to Gateway Comics and Toys, who had almost everything I needed. And I really appreciate it, because there aren't a ton of comic book stores in this area. And if without them, I don't know if we'd have an episode this week. So I want to thank Gateway Comics and Toys for that. And yeah, I'll be going there again next week. So they're going to be getting plenty of my money. Don't worry. So, as I said, those are the issues that we had this week. Make sure to check us out on Twitter. You can find me at WHI Podcast Keith. You can find our producer Liz at WHI Podcast Liz. And you can find Josue at Josue Reads Josue. You can find our show at WHI Podcast on Twitter. I refuse to say X. I will never say X. Also, you can find our other show, Jukebox Vertigo, at Jukebox Vertigo on Twitter. That's our musical playlist building show, which is currently on hiatus, but you can check out the old episodes, and it's a lot of fun. I love that show, and I think it's totally... if I had to listen to our shows, that would be the one I would listen to all the time. I do actually. I listen to Jukebox Vertigo all the time myself. So check that out at Jukebox Vertigo. You can also find my partner Josue when he's not on hiatus at Josue Plays Josue on Twitch. On there, he plays a lot of Mario Kart. He does listen parties when Jukebox Vertigo is around, and just has a blast. And it's always fun to join him on there. I'm usually on when he's on with him. So, don't forget to bag, board, and box your new treasures. We'll see you next week with a new batch of beautiful books. Stay safe and read more comics.
Hey there, Screen Beans. Have you heard about Screen Snark?
Rachel, this is an ad break. They aren't Screen Beans until they listen to the show.
Fine. Potential Screen Beans. You like movies and TV shows, right?
I mean, who doesn't? Screen Snark is a casual conversation about the movies and television shows that are shaping us as we live our everyday lives.
That's right, Matt. We have a chat with at least one incredible guest every episode, hailing from all walks. We've interviewed chefs,
writers, costumers, musicians,
yoga teachers, comedians, burlesque dancers,
folks in the film and TV industry,
and more.
We'd be delighted for you to join us every other Monday on the Certain POV Podcast Network.
Or wherever you get your podcasts, fresh and tasty off the presses.
What? That's not...
Can I call them Screen Beans now?
Fine.
Screen Beans!
So tune in and we'll see you at the movies or on a couch somewhere.
Because you're a whole Screen Beans now. She will be